This SportsCenter is brought to you by Zero Res. Right now at Zero Res, get three rooms cleaned for $119 and $50 off air duct cleaning packages. Book online at ZeroResKC.com or call 816-425-3655 for Zero Res. The big news of the day confirmed here in a statement from the Kansas Jayhawks saying that head coach Bill Self will miss the Big 12 tournament quarterfinal game today against West Virginia due to an illness. The statement reads, Kansas men's basketball coach Bill Self will miss today's Big 12 tournament game as he recovers from an illness. Assistant coach Norm Roberts will serve as acting head coach. Self is doing well and receiving great care at the University of Kansas Health System, the report reads. It's already been busy out here at P&L as last night the action began with West Virginia and Oklahoma State advancing in their games against Texas Tech and Oklahoma, respectively. We move back to the Chiefs with Maddie Lane of KC Sports Network next in the Zone. I'm Joshua Briscoe. This is SportsCenter.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Why are you getting things wrong, Jason?
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Josh Briscoe, and Beards heading up until 12:30. KU Radio Network taking over at 12:30. Brian Haney, Greg Gurley. We are hanging out at Rally House, the premier destination to shop for your favorite team's gear this March. Power and light location with Rally House today. And you can stop in and get all the gear you need to get ready for the game today. You want to come in and buy some new gear to get ready for the game? This is the spot for you. All the Big 12 conference gear, Iowa State fans roaming around, some West Virginia fans roaming around in here to check out some cool gear for the Big 12 tournament going on right by the T-Mobile Center, right across Grand, and all 10 teams merchandise right here just across the street. So make sure you are ready for tip-off of this tournament going on and getting underway right now with Iowa State and Baylor. Weird, no more Iowa State fans in here. I don't know why. They were everywhere, and then, like, you know, 30 minutes ago, they just all, like, disappeared. Poof, they're gone. It's like Kaiser Soze. We now talk some NFL football. Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast, joining us here in the Zone to talk some Chiefs of NFL. Matt, what's up, man? How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. How about you guys?
We are doing just fine. We're talking basketball. We're talking some NFL football, free agency. We're doing all of that stuff. So let's start with the big news this week. Monday, we know what happened. It's been discussed a lot this week. But you've had a few days to marinate and to think about it and you know, come up with your thoughts as opposed to live on the air or live on Monday like everybody else was. But what's your reaction now as a few days have passed to the Chiefs making the decision not to franchise Orlando Brown?
Kind of like everybody else, I think the initial reaction was there's some kind of plan going on, trying to fit all the pieces together and figure out why they were making this move right when they did and what it kind of all meant. But the more time it's gone past and you're starting to get some numbers that are popping out as like estimates and hearing about what Orlando Brown Jr. might be able to fetch in free agency, it might have simply boiled down to the Chiefs didn't want to pay him, you know, a new high, make him the new highest paid offensive tackle in the NFL. And if they franchise tagged him again, essentially that is going to be, whenever he signs next, that sounds like it's going to be his price, is that $22-23+ million per year range. And it just sounds like the Chiefs drew the line in the sand and said, nope, we don't want to do that. Rather than pay you $20 million for another year on the franchise tag, we're going to go ahead and start this process now of trying to figure out how we're going to move on from here.
Yeah, you know, and it seems like it might be back-to-back off seasons where the Chiefs went in with a plan for somebody to continue to be a part of the current plan and roster and then had to maybe speed up a year early of the next phase of that particular player. And, I mean, Tyreek Hill last year, the plan was to sign him. Didn't work out. Okay, we were going to have to figure out life without Tyreek Hill sometime. Let's go ahead and get on that and figure out what we're going to do. They were going to have to find an offensive tackle at some point, even if they signed Orlando Brown to a three-year deal or whatever, maybe just speed up that process. Were you in favor of a long-term deal for Orlando Brown or even playing 1 year on the franchise tag? Or were you more in favor of, you know, tag and trade and find a different solution if you're going to give $20, $21 million to a left tackle?
I think I would have preferred the tag and trade, I think, at this point in time, just because the way it's playing out, the Chiefs at best are going to receive back a third-round comp pick in the future for, you know, for whatever they're getting back from Orlando Brown Jr. if he goes and signs with another team, and that's assuming the Chiefs don't sign their own free agent in the process. So they really might not get much back in terms of a return on their investment. And that's a hard pill to swallow when you trade what is a late first, early second round value for a player. And then at least for 1 year, you do pay him relatively well with the $19-ish million or what, $17-ish million it was last year. So they put a lot of investment into Orlando Brown Jr. They're not going to get a lot of return out of him, especially if it's only going to be 2 years long. They're not going to receive any compensation really outside of, like I said, maybe a future third round pick once he leaves. So from that side of it, yeah, that's not ideal, but you would have to find a team that is willing to sign and trade for him. You would have to be able to have things going quickly, because the Chiefs, I don't think, want to go into free agency with $20 million wrapped up in the franchise tag that they can't just freely spend as free agency starts. So I understand timing-wise and finding a trade partner that it might not have been doable for Orlando Brown Jr. to tag and trade, but the trade for him overall is looking less and less good for the Chiefs the farther away we get, but then you kind of tap that Super Bowl ring on the table, and I guess that doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I was going to say, was the trade worth it? If we go back to a couple of years ago and they don't sign Trent Williams and they release Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz, and it's like, okay, who's going to play left tackle for this team? Are they going to sign one or draft one in the draft with the pick that they had? Are they going to sign a free agent? Orlando Brown, is he on the market? But he's a right tackle, but he played left tackle with the injury to Ronnie Stanley. If we go back then and you say, you know, they'll trade the equivalent of a late first, early second rounder, and for the next 2 years, you'll have good and sometimes better than average left tackle play, and it'll cost you over those 2 years $20 million total against the cap. And then you'll walk on them, and you may get a third or fourth rounder in compensation back after those 2 years. Would you have signed up for that, not even knowing what the postseason result was going to be?
Without seeing like the ultimate results, I don't think that is a good way to go about trying to build out a team and maximize your resources, right? Like, I think if you were able to just take away the season by season results that happened for the team as a whole with it,
yeah,
the move is not particularly efficient. It's not an efficient move for the Chiefs. It's not the best use of resources, whether that's draft capital or money, you know, spending that you have done. But I maintain the same thing with the Frank Clark trade back in 2019 as I do now. The Chiefs, so you can't guarantee, you can't even say the Chiefs likely win the Super Bowl without making moves like this. So, yeah, whether the actual one-to-one value of cash spent or draft capital spend makes sense, the end result still has to be calculated. And, I mean, Super Bowls are really hard to come by. Mm-hmm. So if you have to overpay here and there for a defensive end, a pass rusher, and or a pass protector, I think that's probably okay.
Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, is our guest. KC Laboratory Podcast. Check out the work, kcsn.substack.com. What do you think the plan is now, if you're guessing, and I think, you know, it might be just throwing a dart at this point, for filling that role? And do you think they will allocate a decent amount of resources to that left tackle spot, whether that be free agency money or draft capital? What do you think the Chiefs will do to figure out who their left tackle is going to be when they open up the season that Thursday night?
It's a hard spot to be in, because traditionally Andy Reid, and this goes back to his time with the Eagles, but it's been the case with the Chiefs too, has very much spent a lot of capital to secure a left tackle, to have a left tackle, whether it's a high draft pick or trading picks and then paying money, or just simply paying money to. Like, that's been something very important to Andy Reid since he's been a head coach. But with the Chiefs, they kind of accidentally stumbled into this scenario where they had a better right tackle than left tackle for a while with Mitchell Schwartz. Not that Eric Fisher was a slouch, but Mitchell Schwartz was clearly better. So did that open their eyes to this potential that you don't have to have, your left tackle doesn't have to be your best offensive tackle? Can it be either side? Because looking at this year and the upcoming free agents and the draft class, the Chiefs are going to be in a lot better position to get a functional, if not a relatively good, right tackle. It's the left tackle spot that they're really going to struggle with. So it just all depends on where their head is at on, is there that big of a gap between left and right tackle? Because if there is, they got to figure out something. They're going to have to unload some draft picks, future draft picks, whatever it may be. They can't just sit here at 31, or they can't just dig around in the free agency group and find themselves a good left tackle right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and having that better right tackle than left tackle, certainly it's a good point because they functioned and won a Super Bowl by doing that. But Eric Fisher played a representative left tackle. And if you go out and spend money, and I think that's an interesting point, that if they go out and if they're going to sign a tackle, that might be spending money on one of the premier right tackles that are available and then figuring out the left tackle spot. Can you find somebody that can give you the level of play that Eric Fisher did? Are you stuck, paying a right tackle and then trying to piece together that other side and having it just be an issue all year? Because the good thing about Mitchell Schwartz being as good as he was at right tackle is you got enough from Eric Fisher in those years, too.
That's the key, is that Eric Fisher was no slouch, and he got paid because he was a quality, at the time, a pretty good left tackle for the Chiefs. So, yeah, personally for me, I think Jawan Taylor played with the Jaguars these past four mm-hmm. seasons. 25 years old, he's gotten a little bit better every single year, despite having to spend a year with Urban Meyer. He's a good pass protector, not as good of a run blocker, but a good pass protector. He handled Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack really well in the Jaguars' playoff win over the Chargers. Like, he's a guy I would have my eye on if the Chiefs were willing to spend good money at right tackle. Now, he won't be cheap. You're going to be looking at $15, $16, $17 million per year on a right tackle, which I know when you don't have a left tackle sounds like a lot, but I think here's a guy that could only keep getting better, especially with a – I don't want to necessarily say better for sure, but Andy Heck's a good O-line coach, so he might be able to get him even better there on the right side. Like, that's where my mind goes, but then you have to be comfortable with a first, maybe a second-round player stepping in at left tackle or competing at left tackle and figuring out what else you do on that side. And just in my mind, I don't see options on the left side. I see a few options on the right side, none on the left. I think you kind of take a bird in the hand rather than trying to find one in the bush at this point in time.
Yeah, the left tackle spot, it's interesting. Like, there's no obvious answer there. Would you be okay, in favor, against, if a placeholder was Donovan Smith for a year from the Bucks, and whether that be drafting the replacement for him eventually, and maybe even that first-round draft pick can play left tackle right away and don't have to worry about that. But would you be in favor, as even if it ends up being a plan B, that Donovan Smith is brought in to play left tackle?
It wouldn't be my first choice. I think he's really struggled these last couple of years in Tampa, and that's been playing on a good offensive line with a quarterback in Tom Brady that makes an offensive lineman's job really, really easy. Mahomes is great, but I don't think he's the easiest quarterback to always play offensive line for, especially tackle. Sometimes he will. Sometimes he'll get you out of trouble when you don't have your mm-hmm. best rep. But other times he'll make you block a little longer. He might drift a little back from the pocket. So I don't know. I don't have a lot of confidence in Donovan Smith, and who knows what these guys are actually going to get paid. But right now I've seen his market value pretty high. I think I've seen between $17 and $20 million per year for him.
And that's for Donovan Smith.
And that's just a lot of money. I don't think it'll come in that high, but still, that's just a lot of money for a guy that I think has been on a downward trend the past couple seasons.
Yeah, I'm out. It's that money. I'm thinking like one year, like six or seven.
Right.
I'm way off.
I think that's everyone's thought initially, but I mean, I know it's like on a spot rack right now is at 19 and a half.
Yeah.
And I think that's a little bit of an overestimate just based on the profile he's built up over his career, but I still wouldn't be surprised to see him come around in the mid-teens, maybe lower teens. But yeah, and that's, to me, that just seems like a big risk for an older guy that I think is playing his worst football over the past half decade right now.
Yeah, I'm folding my cards. Too rich for my blood. I'll let you guys play it out there with the going back and forth. Matt Lane is our guest. Is there anybody in the draft then? You guys do a great job covering the draft, and I can't wait for the draft guide to come out here very soon and the combine going on and all the measurements. But anybody in particular that either may be available that can do the job or might get close enough to the Chiefs to where they make a move like they did with Trent McDuffie, knowing they still had another first-round draft pick? But is there anybody there that you like that could be there in the 20/31?
So specifically at left tackle, I think the Chiefs' best hope is going to be Anton Harrison out of Oklahoma. He's a guy that I think there's a little bit of a wide variance on where he's going to go right now in the draft because there's so many physical traits. But coming out of that Oklahoma offensive system, first with Riley, and then now this past season where they just have so many RPOs and so much non-traditional NFL stuff. It's hard to get a read on him, but he's a good tester. He played left tackle. He's still young. I think he just turned 21 within the past month or two. He's the one guy that I think that has played left tackle at college at a well level, as a good level, that might get within range of the Chiefs, or even if the NFL's lower on him than I personally have, he might even slide down there to 31. But after him, you're looking at a lot of right tackles. You know, Darnell Wright out of Tennessee, DeJuan Jones out of Ohio State, good players, good right tackle prospects for the back end of round one. Both can probably step in and start on day one. I don't know if either have extremely high upside. Like, I don't know if you're going to be thinking about either one as being the best right tackle in the NFL or a chance to be that after, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. And I don't know if either of them can really switch to the left side.
Interesting. Broderick Jones and Anton Harrison kind of feel like, you know, you're right. Depending on who you ask, it might be if this guy stayed in the draft or stayed at school one more year, he might be a top 10 tackle. And you wouldn't be able to get him in the 2024 draft. So do you take him at, you know, 31, or you trade up to 25 to get him and say, with Andy Heck, and maybe you find a plan B and a placeholder for a year, and then that guy's ready to go, or maybe he's even good enough that he can play right away. That seems like to be maybe the best spot that they could get to find that guy. It's just so interesting, Matt, because – you know, with Tyreek Hill a year ago, and they make that decision that, look, this is too rich and we're going to go a different direction, we knew they got draft picks back, and you can replace Tyreek Hill in certain ways. You can't replace him with one player, but you're talking about a wide receiver group. It's interesting because, like you said, there is no direct response to no left tackle, to Orlando Brown not being there. I mean, Joe Tooney can help, but you're not hiding your left tackle like you would a right guard or a left guard, where you might have a really good center and a really good tackle, and you can, you know, both sides that. It's just interesting that there is just really no obvious answer here, and I know the Chiefs front office is going to have a plan. I'm just fascinated to see how this plan is going to work out, to see what this offensive line looks like next year.
And that's the hard part, is you lose Tyreek Hill, but you can bring in three receivers for the same price that can all do a certain thing. And even if together they can't equal a Tyreek Hill, they can get you close because you have three guys that all specialize in certain areas. One offensive tackle can play, one left tackle can play at a time. I can't go out and get a really good run blocking left tackle and then a very athletic, you know, left tackle to play on screen plays or out in space, and then get a guy that can, you know, pass protect a little bit. I have to get one player that can do all those things, and that in this situation for the Chiefs is really difficult to find one guy that can do all that stuff. And then you add on to that not being able to tag and trade or work out something that you receive draft compensation back for Orlando Brown Jr. You're now operating with just your normal slate of picks. You don't have the extra first-round pick like you had with Tyreek Hill to play around with a little bit. So it's definitely a lot more difficult to replace the position that Orlando Brown Jr. plays. That said, I do think the Chiefs were doing enough stuff schematically to help Orlando Brown Jr. out that they will be able to continue the majority of what their offense looked like down the stretch, regardless of who steps in there. Maybe it won't be as good overall at that position for a while, but they already had to help Orlando Brown Jr. a little bit more than I think we're used to seeing with Eric Fisher in the past or Mitchell Schwartz on the other side. And so I think that's probably why they feel pretty comfortable drawing a hard line a little bit less than what he wants in the open market.
Matt Lane is our guest, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast. A wide receiver spot, Juju is a free agent, Mecole Hardman a free agent. They've got draft picks where some wide receivers might be when they're selecting. What do you think the Chiefs do to address the wide receiver spot? Do they bring back Juju Smith-Schuster and just get the band back together from last year and move forward? Or do they move some things around, let Juju walk if it's too rich for the Chiefs' blood, and another draft pick, or maybe one-year flyer on, you know, guys that are out there like a Michael Thomas? Adam Thielen is now available. The Minnesota Vikings, that news came down. They just released him. Josh Briscoe has been enamored and just loving any opportunity of getting Braxton Berrios.
Actively campaigning for just any receiver, right? I've heard of, Matt. I mean, Berrios and Thielen, Sky Moore, 1, 2, 3, Kadarius Toney's your number one. I mean, come on.
He just ordered a Chiefs Berrios jersey that he created.
I'm actually getting it done here at Rally House.
At Rally House.
Yeah, they're working on my Thielen one now. That's smoke awesome. Coming out of the machine.
But go ahead.
I think those jerseys will be even better if they don't sign for the Chiefs. I think it's even better to have a Braxton Berrios jersey if he just goes and plays for the Vikings or something.
I'm wearing my Patrick Peterson jersey right now, so I just want to keep fleshing out that rotation for personally. My Tebow one's going to have to move down a rack, but I'll figure it out.
You'll get it someday. You'll get it someday. So what do you think the plan might be? What would be your preference to see the Chiefs do? Bring back Juju or find somebody else with that money?
It sounds like the momentum is heading that direction, that the Chiefs kind of want to keep their wide receiver room. The coaching staff, the players all liked each other. They got along. They clearly just won a Super Bowl with it. They think it's good enough. So I understand the concept they're going for there, but it all comes down to pricing. And you know, today on CBS Sports, Joel Corey had an article of if he was these guys' agents, this is what he would ask for. He very much specifically said, not that they would get it, but this is where he would start. And he's got saying he would, if he was a Juju Smith-Schuster's agent, would ask for, you know, $47.25 million over 3 years, just under $16 million per year with 31.5 fully guaranteed. That's a lot of money for Juju Smith-Schuster for me. And that's even if I could guarantee his health, that seems a little bit on the high end for a wide receiver that isn't able to affect all three levels of the field, and we don't see a ton of dynamic or consistent dynamic play out of him. Then you sprinkle in the fact that I think he's going to, you know, got a knee injury late in the year. He's missed significant time in two out of the last 3 years before this. It's just, that's a lot of money for a receiver that I don't think you can consider reliable. And then when he is on the field, I don't know if he has like high-end wide, or doesn't have wide receiver one potential, and I'm starting to question if it's even high-end wide receiver two. So at that price point, I would be out, and then that puts the Chiefs in a hard spot because it's not like the wide receiver free agency market is that good. It's not like it's a great wide receiver draft class, and we're already talking about how they got to find a left tackle probably in the draft. So they kind of got their backs up in the wall against in some of these spots here. But like, I think paying Juju Smith-Schuster that much money would be, that'd be a hard sell for me if I was helping kind of make these decisions.
I'm with you. I'm not giving him almost $16 million per year to Juju Smith-Schuster. We'll see what the Chiefs end up doing. Matt Lane is our guest. Okay, so let's say they don't bring back Juju Smith-Schuster and they let him walk and he signs somewhere, you know, $16 million per year. Orlando Brown, you know, goes somewhere else, which is, you know, going to happen, not going to be returning to the Chiefs. And they've already released Frank Clark, so they've got that money as well. Where do they spend some money? Are they just throwing it into the bank to invest it? Are they putting it in mutual funds? what do they use that on to have, you know, to add to this team?
Well, no, funny you ask that. Tomorrow on KC Sports Network at kcsn.substack.com, I got an article coming out talking about just some free agents that I think the Chiefs would have their eyes on if they don't end up spending, you know, money on an Orlando Brown Jr. here before free agency starts. The Chiefs have somewhere between $17 and $24 million in cap space right now. They obviously have the magic Mahomes lever they can pull if they need to. There's a Chris Jones extension that's always going to be on the table that's going to open up some more money. So they have options to get more money. But right now they're sitting with, like I said, around $20 million. So that's enough to make some moves. I would start with Jawan Taylor, like I said, right tackle out of Jacksonville. He's going to be take up the majority of that money, but that's at least where I would start because I think he can come in, be a plus starter, and there's still potential to get better. If you can't get Juju Smith-Schuster, but you want a player similar to that, I'd kick the tires on Robert Woods. The Titans let him go. I don't know how expensive he'd be. He's coming off a $16 million deal this past year, but didn't produce like he had been with the Rams. So you want to get a receiver in a similar mold to Juju Smith-Schuster coming off of a not as good year. Maybe that price point's a little bit lower for him, but he can do a lot of the exact same stuff. Or if you want to take a bigger swing and he still might not cost a lot of money, Darius Slayton, wide receiver from the Giants. Just load up on all the Giants receivers because that room was so good, right? But Darius Slayton, I think, has actual potential to be a three-level threat as a wide receiver with more consistent quarterback play. I wonder if that would look a little bit better than it did with Daniel Jones. So those are just some offensive guys I think I have on my short list here of where the Chiefs could spend money that would make sense based on losing a Juju Smith-Schuster and Orlando Brown Jr.
Yeah, Robert Woods is a name that we've talked about a couple of times that wouldn't mind seeing in a Chiefs uniform. So, yeah, those are some interesting names. And it seems like, you know, a real possibility of the Chiefs going and spending some money on the right tackle spot and kind of figuring out the left tackle spot as well. What about on the defensive side? I've seen Marcus Davenport's name connected with the Chiefs. Would you be interested in Davenport? I think Pro Football Focus has it as like a one-year, $12 million deal to have a prove-it deal and to get a chance to play in the playoffs and maybe make a name for himself. What do you think of the possibilities of replacing that Frank Clark, Carlos Dunlap spot with Davenport?
I think it'd be a good move. I think especially if you get it near that price point, and especially with one-year deals, it all depends on how it's going to be structured. If that's, yeah, you know, not all guaranteed, but if that's all going to be on the cap this year, it eats a good chunk of it. But if you have a couple incentives in there and it gets to be the cap hits a little lower right away, it gets a lot more appealing. Davenport's coming off a little bit of a disappointing year, but he's big. He's a long, strong defensive end that could play all three downs for the Chiefs. Like, that would make a ton of sense. Leonard Floyd's kind of in the same mold. He's not maybe as strong, but he's been a more productive pass rusher. The Rams apparently couldn't find a trade partner for a guy that had 30 sacks over the past 3 years. So I don't know what his market's going to look like, but he's another guy that could probably come in, eat up a lot of snaps for the Chiefs, and add a little bit of pass rush potential. But I think they probably are going to spend money. If I were to guess, they're going to spend a little bit more money on the offensive side of the ball in free agency between the tackle and wide receiver position, that I would, you know, look maybe for a little bit more of a bargain on defense. So maybe somebody like a Greg Gaines, a nose tackle from the Rams, not a sexy player by any means, but a 300-plus pounder that can kind of replace Derek Nnadi's spot, holds up well against the run, and allows, you know, Chris Jones, Colin Saunders, if he's back, these guys that would rather get after the passer, not have to worry about eating double teams and stuff like that, and then you wouldn't be breaking the bank for somebody like Greg Gaines.
Last one for you, Matt. Do you have a draft crush? Are you developing a crush on anybody in the draft?
Oh, too many to list here right now, but I mean, we're just gonna, I'll keep it, you know, we'll stay with the fun position. Quentin Johnston, a wide receiver out of TCU, I think it sounds like a lot of people have had him kind of drifting down their boards, like wide receiver 3, 4, 5, just because he's not the most technically refined receiver right now. I would argue that TCU was kind of a dumpster fire coaching-wise before this past year, so you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt. But at the end of the day, 6'3", 210-pound wide receivers don't move the way he does. So, yeah, it might take a year or two for him to become a technical route runner. You just put the ball in his hands, and, I mean, he's forced missed tackles and created yards after the catch at an elite level at 6'3", 210 pounds. I think Andy Reid can find a way to use a guy like that early on while they develop him. So if he's sitting there at 31, you know, left tackle needs to be darned, Quentin Johnston would be really hard for me to pass up.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if he's anywhere near where the Chiefs might be drafting. Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, kcsn.substack.com, KC Laboratory Podcast, and check it out tomorrow. I had no idea that was coming out, so that wasn't like a tee-up or anything. But tomorrow, Matt Lane has his piece that he's going to drop at KC Sports Network with the free agent players that are out there and what the Chiefs might be looking to do. Matt, really appreciate the time as always, brother. We will talk soon, and looking forward to reading that tomorrow.
Awesome. Thank you guys for having me, and enjoy those Barrios jerseys.
Yes, we will. Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast. I think Josh might actually be interested in a Robert Woods jersey. The Barrios we joke around with, he might actually be trying to create a Robert Woods jersey.
Here's what I want. I want the Chiefs to sign a one-year veteran wide receiver and then draft a wide receiver late day one, maybe day two, just until the heat death of the universe. Is that too much to ask? You don't have to pay a Juju or worry about the long-term deals for some of these guys. Just pick up Robert Woods or Adam Thielen every year. Draft your guy in day two. He'll develop for a year. This is the pattern. This is the way.
We'll see. The way to all the gear for the Big 12 tournament is Rally House Power and Light, right across from the T-Mobile Center. All 10 teams, they've got gear here getting ready for the tournament that is about to tip off, like in a minute, tipping off with the Big 12 tournament. So we are here at Rally House Power and Light, our location today, the spot for you to get ready for all of the games and this tournament. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue rolling. More Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Texas, my texts are read so often, I'm thinking of signing them as show contributor.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You know, you come to Rally House and you get great gear and you get awesome stories from people that work here and some cool, significant markings, little paintings, little tattoos on his body. That's amazing what talking with him about his tattoos on both arms. Nobody else knows what we're talking about except for Drake.
Yeah, fair warning, if you have an interesting tattoo is within my range of vision, I will probably ask you about it.
Yep.
So that's just a fair warning.
Yep.
You know, I think for the most part, if you've got visible tattoos, this isn't. Listen, you don't have to go grill everybody, you know, about what it is they've got going on. But sometimes those are there to end up being able to tell stories about different people.
Stories.
And I'm happy to spark the tattoo conversations because
yes.
I think it is such a cool way to be able to tell stories like that or to be able to kind of decorate yourself a little bit too.
Yes.
I love it.
913-912-4810. We are hanging out at Rally House across from the T-Mobile Center, Rally House Power and Light District, and it is Fan Fest, Hoop Central, Miller Lite Fan Fest going on throughout the day, and it's got pep rallies and giveaways and T-shirt cannons and things like that, and Josh Briscoe and Nate Bucati,
oh,
and
yeah.
Baby J is out there right now. Maybe Nate is out there. I don't know. Nobody sees him. But live coverage of the Big 12 tournament brought to you by Barstool Sportsbook, Inside Hollywood Casino, Greenlight Dispensary, Jay Rieger & Company, CBD American Shaman, and Miller Lite. Should also let you know that the 810 Bracket Challenge is live right now. You can go there, 810WHB.com, click on the Bracket Challenge icon. You get signed up, ready to go for when the bracket is released on Sunday. Go there, fill out your teams. And incredible prizes, autographed Chiefs, Sporting KC memorabilia, flat-screen TV, restaurant gift cards, a lot of cool stuff. And what's really cool about that is you can host your group's bracket challenge there. So you got an office pool, you got a bunch of friends. You can go to the 810WHB.com bracket challenge and create your own group. So you're playing with your friends and the people at the office while also still being eligible to win the cool prizes at 810WHB.com. It's brought to you by Twin Peaks, Robert Brogdon, Buick GMC, and Olathe Kia, Smoke and Fire, and Hy-Vee. 913-912-4810. Passing along the information yet again. You heard it right here on Sports Radio 810WHB early in the 9 o'clock hour that Bill Self will not be coaching today. He will not be coaching today's game in the Big 12 tournament. He recovers from an illness. Assistant coach Norm Roberts will serve as the acting head coach. Statement from KU saying Bill Self is doing well and receiving great care at the University of Kansas Health System. It is certainly concerning when somebody is in the hospital and, as the release says there, that he's at the University of Kansas Health System, but he's doing well, which is obviously good news because you hope for the best and you want nothing but the best to be there and receiving great care. The doing well is a big part of that statement that was released, but it's always scary when out of nowhere he's at the press conferences yesterday talking with the media members, doing all of that, and then next thing we hear he's in the hospital and will not be coaching today. No clue on if they win today, if he'll be coaching tomorrow against Baylor or Iowa State, whoever wins that one, and on into the weekend. But all we know right now, Norm Roberts, the acting head coach today for the Kansas Jayhawks, Bill Self, doing well, receiving great care at the University of Kansas Health System.
Yeah, it'll be a emotional day for KU, certainly, and adds kind of a different and certainly unwanted energy to how this game's going to go. Mm-hmm. But like we talked about early on, obviously, Norm Roberts, jokes aside about, you know, what's he know to be on the sideline, he has actually been there before with this team not all that long ago, and you do have all of the foundations of the growth of this team over these last few months, and a lot of those places where Bill Self does his best work is stuff we don't see on game day anyway. It is in the growth and the preparation of the program, and he's got obviously an incredibly good assistant coaching staff around him. So I imagine that with it being, again, like the vaguest of good news there at the end of that statement, makes you think that KU is going to come out ready to play and to do it for Bill Self.
For K-State fans that are wondering, you know, different games that might affect where they end up going. So we've talked about Kansas City a lot. I don't know what you would prefer. Would you prefer to go to Des Moines or Denver? Des Moines is a three-hour drive. Denver is probably going to be a flight. Is there more stuff to do in Denver than in Des Moines?
Yes.
I know that was rhetorical.
Definitely. Okay, sorry. I wasn't sure. I just wanted to make sure you did know.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I think there's a lot of things to do in Des Moines. Drake, you went to Drake, so a lot of stuff to do in Des Moines.
Nodding.
You can tell us all of the cool restaurants to go to.
Drake, would you please just list off all the cool things you can do in Des Moines?
Graduate and leave.
Go to school, graduate, get out. You also would be away from KU fans. So do you want to be there with KU and K-State in Des Moines? But again, it's a flight probably to get to Denver instead of driving to Des Moines for a couple of days. Something to keep an eye on for K-State. If you are wanting to go to Des Moines, you need to pay attention to Marquette. Because Marquette right now is heading to Des Moines with KU because they are ahead of K-State in all of these different bracketologies, bracket matrix. They would be at Des Moines or in Des Moines with KU. Right now, Marquette is down by 10 points to St. John's in the Big East tournament. That's on FS1. It's 5 minutes to go in the first half. So if Marquette were to lose that game, and let's say K-State wins today even, because Marquette would end with no more quad one or quad two. St. John's isn't a quad one or a quad two. Actually, I think St. John's might be a quad two. So that'd be a quad two loss for Marquette. While K-State can pick up a quad one win tonight, if you want to go to Des Moines, it's a big day if Marquette were to lose and K-State were to beat TCU. If you want to go to Denver, you might want to root for Marquette against St. John's because K-State would end up in Denver there. Whether they end up in Louisville, Vegas, KC, or New York for the regional, that first opening weekend when we talk about that pod system, for K-State, it's going to be Des Moines or Denver. And I think a lot of it depends on where they are on the seed line, above or below Marquette. And not even on the seed line, just where the committee ranks the teams 1 through 68. If they're above Marquette, they're going to Des Moines. If they're below Marquette, they're going to Denver. So something to keep in mind.
I've got an exclusive report from a contributor to The Zone who would like to stand up. This feels like a safe for air text.
Okay.
That's a risky game to play with Nick Schaefer. Make us text at us, you, me, and Beards, to say, dudes, Des Moines is a sneaky fun town, great downtown, arena is next to downtown, tons of breweries, it is Iowa after all. And then I don't know what Fong Pizza is.
Fong Pizza?
But is that Drake
says yes.
Good, like thumbs up, thumbs sideways?
It wasn't an enthusiastic yes, although that is typically Drake.
Yeah, well that's, yeah, what, I don't know, what are you enthusiastic about other than leaving Iowa? Crab Rangoon Pizza at Fong's.
Sign me up.
Okay.
Sign me up. We get Chinese food just specifically so I can get Crab Rangoon. Then what else do you want? I don't care. Just get the Crab Rangoon.
And then a pile of carbs and a pile of chicken.
Put it on pizza.
All
for that.
That sounds great. The thing I'm really surprised about is the fact that apparently Mick does listen to the show when he's not here. He likes to pretend when he comes in, like, oh, I know you guys were talking earlier today about whatever. Usually I think he's just guessing, you know, like, you talked about the Chiefs earlier and I really disagreed. It's like, oh, okay.
He just texts Beards, hey, what have you guys talked? He looks at the Twitter, a preview of the show.
He grabs the show sheet. That's not true because that wouldn't help him that often, you know. He'd be like, oh yeah, you guys have talked about MU and the SEC. Not really. You haven't, I guess, a little bit, you know, a breath.
Mick says, I'm a P1. He also says, why is Denver a flight? I'll spend $100 on gas, take my entire family in 7 hours instead of spending $2,000 on flights and it taking 5 hours.
Does Mick want to just call in and we can all just leave?
Yeah, it's a great point. Beards, this is such a good point. Beards,
no.
Rally House, man.
I'll just put the phone up. He can keep talking and we'll all just leave.
We'll talk with Mick tomorrow, okay? We'll have Mick express all of
this. Jason, I'm trying
tomorrow
to get us out earlier.
It's a great point. I wasn't even listening to what you were saying other than, bring Mick on the phone here. He doesn't need any more airtime, although he might be over at the McFadden studio. Maybe he just connects there.
Beards late edition for the Cuts this year for Cuts Madness. We mark that just Jason saying, sorry, I wasn't listening, because I think that could be it. Maybe not a high seed, but I think
I didn't mark it.
Good. Okay. I just think the committee needs to hear that one out of context.
But are you making an 8-hour drive from KC to Denver to go see the opening round games for K-State, or are you saving that time and money to then, if they win,
that's a good question,
as a 2 seed, beat a 7 and a 10, a 7 or a 10, and they're in the Sweet 16, and then you either go right here or to Louisville or Vegas? Or you better save your money if you want to go see him in New York.
Well, that's a good
thing.
Point.
If I'm KU or K-State, I don't want New York.
So you said it'd probably be a 7 and a 10, right, that they would have to get past there?
Yeah, as a 2.
You definitely don't want to drive.
7
or a 10. You definitely don't want to drive. Yeah, that makes sense. You definitely don't want to drive, like, 14 round-trip hours to watch your team lose the 7-10 game.
Yeah.
So
it'd be worse.
And you say, oh, I drove out there, and they won a game they were favored in. You know, that's not quite as exciting. So I could see waiting for the next round, but also like
but
it might be kind of
hours.
Fun to see it. But right, it, that 3 hour little commute. Hey, K-State's in a tournament. I mean, we're in the tournament, high seed.
Yep.
This could be a lot of fun. The beginning of the run.
Yeah,
you could just hop up to Des Moines. I don't know if you'd make that drive to Denver.
Yeah, no, I would.
I get sleepy when I drive for too long. It's a really unfortunate trait.
Well, I don't know. Maybe some fans would prefer Denver. Some fans would prefer Des Moines.
I wonder if there's any other reason Mick doesn't want to fly to Denver and then back from Denver and like have to go through security and everything.
That's a good point. Driving from Denver to here is a little different than going through security from Denver to here.
I just accused Mick of a federal crime. I think I did.
No. There's nothing against driving it. I've never seen any law against trafficking.
That's why it's called traffic.
There's a lot of traffic going on.
I'm not going to read Mick's most recent text.
Oh. It just says, I'm driving. It's dangerous to call in.
That is really the one I wasn't going to read. I didn't want to put Mick on blast for texting while driving.
No, you
even
can
though
be
I did
at a stoplight.
I did accuse him of a federal crime, though.
You can
so
be at a stoplight.
I accused him of a federal crime that I don't believe he's committing. Jason basically put him on blast for committing a traffic crime.
No, he could be at a stoplight.
Mick says there's gambling and legal weed in Colorado. Is that even allowed? I thought only one state on each side was allowed to have one of those things.
Yeah, you only get one per state.
That's what I thought. Maybe Colorado's figured something out.
I don't think. I mean, come on. Mm. Really? Have they figured something out? Oh, we'll see. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Continue rolling. The Big 12 tournament is underway with Iowa State on top of Baylor by 3 right now. 12 minutes to go in the first half. KU West Virginia tipping off after that one. We head to the KU Radio Network at 12:30 today. Hanging out at Rally House, Power and Light, our location, your spot for all the best gear for the Big 12 tournament. We continue. More Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Appreciate the phone call, man. 267.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, wrapping up the 11 o'clock hour, hanging out at Rally House today. Power and Light right across from T-Mobile Center. Getting you ready for the Big 12 tournament. All 10 teams gear here at Rally House Power and Light location right across from T-Mobile. Your spot to get geared up for the Big 12 tournament. Your spot for whether that be t-shirts, hats, sweatshirts, beanies, flags, pennants.
Anything. Anything you want. Anything at all.
All of this stuff in the freezer.
It's loud. And Jason, are you realizing that the music's really loud? Jason's disoriented by how loud the music is. But that's okay. They're going to come back and have another half hour of show.
Cannot hear anything.
Why can't Jason hear anything? I'm going to turn his mic up.